It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the big stories making news this week concerns comedian Bill Cosby's sexual assault case proceeding to trial on three counts of felony indecent sexual assault. So what happens next? I'm joined now by Duquesne University law professor Wes Oliver, a criminal law expert who's been closely following the Cosby case. Wes Oliver, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter at esspgh. If you have a comment or question, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Wes Oliver, it looked for the longest time as though this case would never come to trial. What's changed? Why is it happening?
Well, there was a new DA. The previous district attorney had, it seems, perhaps made a deal with Cosby not to prosecute. That was very much in dispute. And the new DA basically ran on a platform of prosecuting Bill Cosby. That new DA won, and now he's being prosecuted.
If the deal was made, and you're saying there's some question as to whether there ever was a deal, and the deal was that that Mr. Cosby, if he was forthright in questioning, would not be forced to go to trial. If there was a deal and it was reneged upon, I mean, isn't there some recourse for Cosby or his defense team here?
Well, that was the subject of a very long hearing back in February. And this was the question. What was the nature of that deal? What was the nature of, actually, let's not call it a deal. Let's say, what was the nature of that understanding? And the previous district attorney, Bruce Castor Jr., had essentially, by his testimony, told Bill Cosby that he would not be prosecuting him, and that Castor believed that that meant that Cosby had to testify in the civil deposition. Well, the problem with that was that DAs all the time decline prosecutions. They decide not to go forward with a case. But that's a very different thing than agreeing not to prosecute. And typically when a DA enters into a non-prosecution agreement, that's something that's memorialized in writing and often done before court.
So you're saying that there was no record of this? There was nothing in writing?
No. No, there was no record at all. And by Castor's testimony that was being proffered by Cosby's team, Castor simply said, I am not prosecuted. And Castor testified at the hearing that meant that no one could subsequently prosecute, which that was a very strained legal analysis by most of us who were observing.
But wasn't Cosby's whole testimony in this civil case, wasn't it? I mean, you think they would have, you know, some sort of formal agreement here that spells all of this out, because we've been led to believe that if he spoke forthrightly about what exactly happened, that, you know, he would be immune from prosecution in the same way that if you obtain evidence without a warrant, it's thrown out.
Right. Okay, so the warrant issue is very different because that involves police misconduct, and there's an effort to deter police misconduct. That's a whole much longer story.
Right,
but here's the interesting thing about his testimony in terms of the immunity. You would think that Cosby's lawyers would not have allowed him to give this testimony in the absence of some sort of an agreement.
Right.
So that supports his theory that he was probably represented by very able counsel who would have, if he were smart, I'm sure he was, would have said, we won't do this unless there's some sort of an agreement that it won't be used in a criminal prosecution. But at no point during that deposition does Cosby stop and interpose a Fifth Amendment objection, and then there's a waiver of that, or there's something introduced into the transcript indicating that there has been an arrangement that's been made. So if there was this type of an arrangement, it was done so much under the table that the law is not going to now recognize it.
So is there any physical evidence that can be introduced to back up the claims of Andrea Constand, an employee at Bill Cosby's alma mater, Temple University? She was the first of more than 50 women who have accused Cosby of sexual misconduct.
None that I'm aware of, and that's always a problem in cases like this. So in a case like this, you've got one credible witness against another credible witness. And the real issue, I believe, in resolving that credibility against Cosby is going to turn on how many, if any, of the other alleged victims get to testify.
What will the defense point to?
Well, the defense will say she didn't complain about this for a year, and she made the complaint in Canada. That's the location makes any real difference, but she moved away from Philadelphia, and so she makes the complaint to authorities in Ontario for the first time a year later. She maintained contact with Cosby well after the alleged incident. There were phone calls that her mother made to Bill Cosby, which were allegedly recorded. So there are definitely things that are problematic about her story.
Has the, you talked about how this has all happened, all of this is coming out long after these alleged incidents occurred, and has the statute of limitations, if there is in fact one, run out on some of the claims that are being brought forward?
No, not with this particular victim. There's, I believe, a 12-year statute of limitations on this particular crime, and this charge was filed at the earliest possible moment that the new district attorney could do so, as to avoid this. I mean, this thing would have, if they had delayed even a few months in filing this, the statute of limitations would have in fact run.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Duquesne University law professor Wes Oliver about the Bill Cosby sexual assault case, which is proceeding to trial on three counts of felony indecent sexual assault. What is important to know about Pennsylvania law as it applies to this case?
Well, I'm not sure Pennsylvania has that much that's unique. But Pennsylvania, like a lot of states, is very liberal in admitting the testimony of other victims when they fit a similar pattern. Pennsylvania is not as explicit as even the federal courts. But Pennsylvania is much like a lot of other states in having a very liberal view of when other victims who tell a similar tale in a sexual assault case can come forward. And so obviously with some 57 other victims now who tell a similar story, this is going to be very problematic for Bill Cosby, particularly when their stories have all these similarities involving him giving them pills.
And is there any limitation on how many witnesses they can call? Would a witness be disqualified depending on, how long ago their allegations date back to?
Yeah, so the answer is, as the answer to most legal questions is maybe, that there's a balancing test, whether the testimony is more prejudicial than it is probative. And so the older the allegation, the less probative it would be on the crime that allegedly occurred 12 years ago. But the closer in time, the more relevant it would be. But I think the bigger issue is going to be one of similarity. So here was a woman who was told that she knew she was taking a pill. It wasn't like something was put into her drink. I think there were a couple of women who claimed that Cosby put something in their coffee or put something in their wine. Well, those stories are a little bit different. And so I think that to the extent the court cabins this and lets something less than all 57 testify, I think the cases that are most similar, the ones where the the alleged victim knowingly takes some kind of a pill will be the ones that come in.
You were quoted as saying, if a jury truly has not formed an opinion about Cosby's guilt prior to the case, a conviction would be difficult for the prosecution to obtain. Why would that be?
That's if the other witnesses don't, if the other alleged victims don't come forward. Because this is a he said, she said story. If you haven't heard the allegations about Bill Cosby, and you have to be living under a rock not to have heard the allegations about Bill Cosby, and you just say, there's one person out there who claims Bill Cosby raped her years and years ago, and Bill Cosby said she didn't, and there's no physical evidence, and the complaint was made a year later, and you believe in the reasonable doubt standard, you've got a standard he said, she said case, and if both appear credible, that's 50-50 and not beyond a reasonable doubt. But I think that you're going to have a hard time finding a jury that hasn't been influenced by all these stories. But then secondly, I do think these women are going to be allowed to testify, at least some of them, and that will change the dynamic of the jury substantially.
It would seem that you have a problem of notoriety here, you know, based in part on what you just mentioned, that there you would have to be living under a rock not to have heard about this case. So isn't it going to be difficult finding a jury that, A, hasn't formed some kind of opinion about Bill Cosby? Because haven't they either heard the numerous stories in the media of women who say Cosby drugged and sexually assaulted them, or who have a hard time imagining that the Jell-O pudding spokesman could have done what he's being accused of?
Yes. Yes. Everything you just said there is correct. And one of the things is that we see this, it's not like we haven't encountered this problem before. And so therefore, the law actually is not as stringent as we might expect it to be on the opinions that jurors have coming into the trial. So think about the O.J. Simpson case, for instance. You could not move that case to Japan and find jurors who haven't heard of the O.J. Simpson case. So you have to then take as a baseline that there are going to be jurors out there. It's inevitable that the jurors will have heard about this case. They will tell you that they've heard the coverage, that they may have formed some opinions, but essentially what the court will ask is, in spite of what you've heard, do you think you could fairly listen to this case and leave aside any opinions you've formed up until now? And the law essentially says, if a juror says that, and we believe them, we take them at their word, and there's nothing that they said that contradicts their claim that they can be fair and impartial, we let them sit. Now, all kinds of psychological studies have shown that jurors cannot forget what they already know or already think they believe. But the reality is we've got to be able to try cases like O.J. Simpson and Bill Cosby. And so the law, I think, is a little more permissive than we might ideally like it to be, because the practical reality is Bill Cosby and O.J. Simpson cannot be immune from prosecution just because they're famous.
How important is the deposition given by Camille Cosby going to be in this case?
That's a great question. It depends on what she says, and it depends on what they're allowed to ask her about. So Massachusetts law, where this deposition is being held, is kind of funny in the following way. It does not create an exception to the marital privilege or the spousal privilege doctrine for her business dealings with Bill Cosby. So there's a she's only able to talk about those things that were revealed to third parties. In most jurisdictions, and I think the district court got it wrong in its ruling on the deposition in this case, the district court is not letting her be deposed about their business dealings. If she were, she could be asked things like, did you ever make any payouts to maintain the reputation of Bill Cosby? So I'm not entirely sure what she's going to be deposed about. I think that, there may be an effort to get around the very limited scope of the current district court's limitation on the deposition. And if that is successful, I think questions about payouts could be raised. But as the district court has limited the deposition so far, I'm not sure what her usefulness will be.
When is this trial going to get underway?
Well, that's a great question. I can't even give you the parameters for how that's going to come down. There will be, maybe I can give you parameters. There will be a discovery order or discovery motions that are made. There will be a process by which the prosecution has to disclose evidence that it's going to use. There will be some required defense disclosures. The court will set a timetable for this, but as we've seen with the other really big high-profile case in Pennsylvania, the Jerry Sandusky case, contrast the Sandusky case with the Penn State officials. So you've seen with really high-profile cases in Pennsylvania, anything from a race to a trial to something that's dragged out now for 4 or 5 years.
What does this entire case come down to, as far as you're concerned?
Credibility of
the witnesses.
Yep.
And Cosby's credibility.
Yeah, it's Cosby's credibility versus Constance's credibility, because there's no physical evidence, and what happens is that in a case like this, the victim's credibility can be bolstered by the fact that there are 57 other people who make a similar claim. So that really is, I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. Do you believe Bill Cosby or do you believe Andrea Constand?
If Cosby is convicted, what kind of a sentence is he looking at?
I think it's 10 years.
10 years.
And for a man of his age, that's life.
That's a very good point. But if he is sentenced to 10 years, what is the likelihood he's going to serve all 10 of those years?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure at all. There could be a variety of things that come into play. His health could be a factor. I would be speculating too much to try to answer that question.
Well, it is something that we'll continue to follow and is probably one of the biggest news stories of this very busy week. Duquesne University Law Professor Wes Oliver joining us to talk about the Bill Cosby case. Professor Oliver, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Sure, it was a delight.